Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. It is December 2019, and you know what that means. It's time for the MMA Year in Review series to begin. We start with January, February, and March. All kinds of things happening. If you listen to the show for any period of time, or if you're new to the show, kind of get the idea at this point. Basically, we look back at the whole year in review over four different episodes. And we break them up 3 months at a time. And so this episode, like I mentioned, starts with January, February, and March. Basically, what I do is I go through all these different stories throughout the year, pull out some of the big ones, the fun headlines, the big results, and so on. And we talk about them. We also talk about some of the other random things that happened during the year. It's one of my favorite series of shows to do in the year. And I'm glad you're here with me. And joining me here in a second will be Paul Fontaine. He is a writer for our very website, as well as MMADraws.com. Does a lot of the rating stuff and all that. But yeah, he's one's been joining me for a lot of these through the years. So he's going to help me do all four of them. And yeah, I mean, you guys kind of get the gist. Let's jump ahead. MMA Year in Review, part one begins right about now. Well, a year has passed by already, and crazy things, you know, and so we're here back with our good friend of the website, contributor to the website, writer for all of our, not all of it, but most of our, a lot of our Bellator and obviously UFC coverage as well, and he is also does the ratings every single week for Raw and SmackDown, as well as the Wednesday Night Wars, NXT, and AEW. And he also has his own site, MMADraws.com. The very busy, numbers-driven, one-of-a-kind Canadian, Paul Fontaine is back. Paul, we'll start with the most basic of questions. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm working my way towards good.
As we all are. As we all are. We appreciate the time tonight and take your mind off things for a bit. And As we do, again, around every December, you and I go through the MMA Year in Review show, and it is we do four of these throughout December, and then the first week of January, once things wrap up, in case, you know, crazy things happen, you know, especially this year with Fedor Rampage and all the stuff going on the end of the year on December 31st or whatever it is. So yeah, so we go through these. Format is pretty straightforward. I go through the archives. I go through this big list, month by month stuff. And then I go through and kind of pick out some of the top headlines, interesting things, interesting fight announcements, all those type of things. I pick out some of the top ones. Paul and I talk about for a few minutes, and we kind of go through the rest of the list. And if there's ones that interest to him or myself, you'll take some stops on the highway, so to speak, and check them out. So yeah, without further ado, let me start here. This section, Paul, and I've given you this list beforehand. As you know, as things go, it was typically quiet. The first quarter of the year, if I remember back to 2018, was really kind of dead last year. But you know, there was, as we're going to talk to you, a few things through here. Obviously, the ESPN relationship officially began. Get a little bit deeper a couple of months later with pay-per-views officially moving full over to ESPN Plus, but overall, you know, there were some announcements, but it seems that historically, you know, save for the occasional big fighters we'll talk about, it's really just kind of setting up the rest of the year in a lot of ways. Seems pretty consistent.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually what January is. But I mean, obviously the ESPN relationship was huge. And I mean, looking back, it was huge. Looking forward, at the time, it was huge. I mean, I think we were talking about it this time last year. What's it going to mean and all that stuff. And, you know, and Bellator had, as it usually does, its biggest event in January. We can say they peak-goed, if you can see what I did there, in January, and kind of fell from there. As did Aaron. It wasn't, you know, your monster month like, you know, July tends to be, but I think it was, you know, a little bit more than just a place setter month, but there definitely was a lot of place setting.
All right, so let's get right into it. We'll start with January, obviously, and the big event news, all combined in one, was UFC debuting finally on ESPN. This was this debut of this five and what would later turn out to be a 7-year relationship, at minimum, just for the TV end of things, but also we'd learn for the pay per view end. We'll get to that when we get to March. But UFC debuting in Brooklyn, New York, at the famed Barclays Center, home of the Khabib and Conor dolly throwing incident, and finally looks like we're going to get Khabib Ferguson coming up next year. We'll talk about that obviously a year from now. But side of big events, and Henry Cejudo, the guy that came into this fight displaying a little bit more the verbal skill set, so to speak. Really just kind of getting his character out there. Cringeworthy is probably the thing that came up the most when people talk about Cejudo. But going down to, Dillashaw was going down in weight and 125 pounds to take on Cejudo. And there was a lot of talk going in this. The weight cutting wasn't going to be an issue and blah, blah, blah. This fight had been built up, the big debut, as it seems it always happens when UFC starts on a new network. Henry Cejudo defeating TJ Dillashaw in just 32 seconds by TKO. Could have been, early stoppage, maybe a little bit. Dillashaw was, a little bit woozy, but, complaining that afterwards he didn't lose, didn't really do the good winner type thing, really a sore loser. There's a lot of question about what's going to be next for both guys, and we'd soon learn fast after that what would happen to TJ Dillashaw. But ESPN era, just as the UFC and Fox era began with that quick knockout of Junior Dos Santos knocking out Cain Velasquez, we have this fight in 32 seconds, not much to it. And yeah, this was quite a night. We'll get to the rest of the card, but we'll start right from the top. Henry Cejudo kicking off the ESPN era.
Yeah, I kind of liked Henry Cejudo's, gimmick, the cringy Cejudo there. Like, I feel like it was nice to see a little bit of personality. Not to say that Demetrius Johnson didn't have personality, because he did, and he did appeal to a segment of the population, like gamers and stuff like that. But I feel like Cejudo definitely brought some attention to the division that wasn't there before. And when I say the division, I mean, obviously he won the bantamweight title, but he's still the featherweight champion. And I do think that in, however long it's been that he's been a champion now, 18 months or so, he's made more with it than Demetrius Johnson did in what seems like about a decade with the belt. So, and then to have that happen on ESPN, which is really the biggest possible platform that you could have it on, other than like a super huge pay-per-view, which that fight wasn't going to be on. I thought it was a win-win all around. And I do feel that out of, there's not a lot of people, I wouldn't say anybody, but obviously Jorge Masvidal, but out of anybody, like Henry Cejudo really, I think, made more of his name in 2019, the latter half of 2018, than just about anybody else in UFC.
So I'm gonna, at the risk of embarrassing myself, I couldn't really remember what title this was for, because Henry Cejudo has been on the shelf for so long. So this was for the flyweight title.
Well, it was okay.
I think so.
I'm
right?
The one that embarrassed myself. Well, because they did, because that's right. Because then they were going to have a rematch for the bantamweight title, and then DJ. Yeah, it got suspended, and TJ they popped, ended up fighting for the vacant title. You're right. So there you go. So for the flyweight division, he did a great job to bring attention to the division. But I mean, and then there was all that talk about getting rid of the division, and I know we're going to talk about that later as well. But I mean, the division's still around, and honestly, probably stronger than it was when DJ was at the top of it.
Yeah, and so this, because Cejudo did not fight the rest of the year. Spoiler alert for the rest of the year, everyone. It's Henry Cejudo did not fight getting surgery. I think he doesn't have a title fight at this point scheduled yet, but hoping soon. I think, both the flyweight division, like you mentioned, it got a nice bump along the way, but it's kind of been like, I think that might be Cejudo's, one of his best accomplishments. It feels like he's kept the flyweight division rather relevant, even though he's been out almost the entire year. And that's a pretty good nod to him. So yeah, kind of looking forward to seeing what he does next. And if he can fight, two, three times, it's going to be difficult always with these guys that hold two titles. We've never seen someone that's been able to regularly defend both. And, it kind of it's essentially put two divisions on ice for the better part of a year. So that's the unfortunate part, but obviously looking forward to seeing him
get back in there. He did fight one more time because he won the bantamweight title.
Oh, that's right. That's Jesus. I am all
Marlon Moraes. Yeah.
I just talked about
that. Oh, me too. Me too. I had to look it up. I was pretty sure you were wrong, but I wasn't positive. So I definitely checked it. But the flyweight division has basically been on ice since January of, last year. But yet, the division itself is thriving. It's just the title that is kind of on ice. And, and him, he's always around. He shows up at most shows and he does a really good job of promoting himself and the division. And, I think he's been definitely a positive and I think him beating Demetrius Johnson in 2018 was probably what was best for business.
Let's go through very well done. Look at the rest of the card here. So we had this embarrassing debut by Greg Hardy, disqualification. Obviously, there was a lot of negative buzz about him going into the show because of all the domestic violence stuff and being placed on the same card as I think this was the same card as Rachel Ostovich.
Yeah, Rachel Ostovich, yeah.
That whole thing. Donald Cerrone finally coming back to life, kind of being left for dead. Dominant win over a guy that in Alexander Hernandez who looked like he was going to be one of these guys to take a big step forward in the year ahead, but he really took a step back. Guy with a big mouth, and Cerrone shut it pretty effectively, just dominating him, eventually being by TKO. And this started a lot of buzz towards a fight with Conor McGregor. We'll talk about that a lot more. One of the big stories, obviously, TJ making way. We talked about the end of the flyweights. This was UFC's big debut on ESPN and ESPN Plus, which carried the prelims, I believe. Was touting 525,000 new subscribers. And actually, sorry, now I remember that. The prelims are on main ESPN. ESPN Plus was actually had the main card, which is why they got over 500,000 new subscribers for this. And everything held up really well. I was really impressed by it. There was no blips in service or anything like that, at least on this end. So for the most part, everything was good. Gregor Gillespie, who fought on the show, actually was robbed during the show of his some of his bags and also his wallet as well. And that's crazy to think, considering all security back there and so on at UFC events. This was the debut of the UFC's new title belt look. Less said about this, the better, because I think they are completely ugly and I miss the old school belts quite a bit. And then finally coming out of this for those pro wrestling fans, there was a little bit of almost a love buzz. And I think it's just a lot of, PR flirting between Cejudo and the former fiance of one John Cena, Nikki Bella. So anything else stick out to you about that card?
Well, yeah, I just, I know that going into this show, like other than the fact, of the title of TJ moving down in weight to challenge for the flyweight title, the most of the talk was about, all the controversy with Rachel Ostovich and Greg Hardy being on the same card and, that it was in bad taste and everything. And really, like, that kind of turned into a non-story. And it really, like, it was more about Greg Hardy and just, like, the fact that he was DQ'd and that he probably wasn't, as a fighter, ready for that stage that he was on and, kind of embarrassed himself by, kind of gassing out and then just, getting himself DQ'd. And the rest of the year was kind of rehabbing him, because I really do feel like he's a part of this ESPN deal. Like they seem to want him on all their cards, mm-hmm. Even though he's relatively inexperienced. He's a big name and he can attract casual sports fans. He was put on the main card in his UFC debut, which is not something that usually happens unless it's a celebrity, and he was something of a celebrity. And then that whole them getting 525,000 new subs. I mean that's a huge deal. It kind of sucks that we don't get viewership numbers, and it really does feel at the end of the year like that the shows on ESPN can't be doing much in the way of viewers, but they seem happy, so it must be good for them, and it's obviously good for UFC.
Paramount Network was pretty happy with what they did. Bellator did with Bellator 214 on Paramount Network. Ryan, this is the finals of the long-running heavyweight Grand Prix and also for the vacant heavyweight title. One of the strange oddities, I'd say, in MMA over the past 5 or so years has been how Bellator has gone about dealing with their heavyweight title, which has essentially been on ice for a long time, but was finally claimed at this night. Ryan Bader knocking out Fedor Emelianenko just 35 seconds to become both the light heavyweight champion and also the heavyweight champion of the world to win the Grand Prix. As you mentioned earlier, alluded to with your funny Pico joke, Dave Meltzer was quite upset at cage side. I heard crying, just furious at his boy Aaron Pico getting knocked out cold, and the stank on Aaron Pico was, you could smell it all the way here in New Hampshire. That's for sure. Has a lot of work to do. We'll talk about him a lot more in the year. Jack Swagger, aka Jake Hager, making his MMA debut with a quick submission win. This point at the year. This was Fedor's last fight with Bellator. It was not expected he was going to come back, or if he was, perhaps, you know, one more fight in Russia or something like that. That would obviously change as the year went on. And again, I mentioned the ratings. The Paramount Network drew about 697,000 total viewers, and then it peaked at 1.2 million. I believe this was for the quick Bader and Fedor fight. Should have said Bader, taking the name. But yeah, I mean, for Bellator, a, you know, promotion that has been doing, you know, trying to do these tentpole events, you know, big attractions, things like that. You know, this was as expected. Ryan Bader, a guy who, you know, was previously seen as so boring, just ran through this heavyweight tournament and killed guys. I think his in cage time was like just minutes. I mean, he was just knocking out guys left and right, taking out Bader. God, I'm all messed up. Taking out Fedor, and yeah, this was overall, you know, this was a fun night for Bellator in a lot of ways. Yeah. The Pico fight was interesting, and obviously, you know, when Jake Hager made his debut, that's always fun for our website as well.
Yeah, no, it, you know, putting aside, you know, Pico, Hager had a great debut, and you know, he went on to stay undefeated the rest of the year. Fedor making the finals, Bellator had to love that, and then Bader. Ryan Bader, he actually, if I recall correctly, went through the whole tournament without absorbing a strike.
Yes.
You know, he had the one fight with Mitrion that went like 25 minutes, I think. I think I'm remembering this right, or 15. But it was just basically, he just laid on top of him, ground and pounded him, and Mitrion didn't get a strike in, if I'm remembering that right.
Yeah, I, sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, everything was a quick knockout. And then, you know, like they did, they peaked at their 697,000 with the $1.2 million peak for the main event. So it obviously would have been a higher rating if the fight had gone longer, and that they never even came close to 697,000 the rest of the year. So I, you know, I think for them, they have to be very happy with that.
Let's go through the rest of the month here. Jimmy Smith revealing that the UFC declined to renew his contract. So at the end of last year, you know, it was kind of the surprise all of a sudden he was gone. But yeah, he revealed that the UFC actually just declined to renew the offer, making him a free agent. He would find some work later on in the year. Chad Mendes, former title contender, guy could just never get over the hump and ran into the Conor McGregor train at one point, retiring after his loss at UFC 232. Fabricio Werdum decided he wanted out of the UFC due to his USADA failure, be able to fight somewhere else. Ben Rothwell, speaking of USADA failures, was set to return after his 2-year suspension. Colby Covington, we'll talk about him a lot this year, went off on the UFC, just going, I think it was his Ariel show or anyone show he could get on at this point, just ripping on Dana White and the UFC, not for him not getting a title shot against Tyron Woodley. Tito Ortiz was talking about a Chael Sonnen rematch for Bellator for some reason, and wants it at Madison Square Garden, of all places. Speaking of Chael Sonnen, he got his BJJ black belt. Joe Benavidez, you're talking about the non-death of the flyweights, re-signing for a 4-fight extension with the idea he was going to fight at flyweight, so it looks like the division was not dead after all. Still waiting for that title shot against Henry Cejudo, by the way. John Jones, his tests for UFC 232 came back clean, except for some Tyrinobol picograms, and there's VADA was involved, and yeah, just a, VADA picked up the Tiriabol picograms, the USADA test, and the California State Athletic Commission test came back all clean. So go ahead and try to figure that one out. Frank Mir announced he was going to be doing his making his debut in professional wrestling at Josh Barnett's Bloodsport for WrestleMania weekend. John Jones, just speaking of him a second ago, is scheduled to fight in March against top contender Anthony Smith at UFC 235. That show would also feature Kamaru Usman, Tyron Woodley, and Cody Garbrandt returning after a long layoff against Pedro Munhoz. And again, we just talked about it a few seconds ago. Covington was very upset at Usman getting the title shot. Randomly, Scott Coker really doesn't talk a lot about the UFC. We said he was not a fan of the California State Athletic Commission licensing John Jones. We got some fight announcements and some main events for the first half of the year. UFC Wichita getting Derek Lewis versus JDS. Junior Dos Santos is the main event. UFC 237 getting Rose Namajunas at that point, the women's strawweight champion, taking on top contender and just absolute killer Jessica Andrade in a title fight down in Brazil. UFC Philly was to get Justin Gaethje and Edson Barbosa as a headliner. UFC London got Darren Till versus Jorge Masvidal as a headliner. That will be very important later on. And UFC Miami, a fight we did not get at the show, Yoel Romero and Paulo Costa as a headliner. We would have to wait for that. We also got this strange announcement that Anthony Pettis was going to go up to 170 pounds and take on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Why not? Fighting at UFC Nashville in March. Bellator decided to book a Roy McDonald, John Fitch title fight as part of their Grand Prix for April. Bellator decided to, speaking of Dave Meltzer, Bellator booked their next Elimelech McFarlane title fight for April. Dana White said there was no immediate rematch coming for Chris Cyborg against Amanda Nunes, having lost in December of 2018. Oakland Raiders quarterback Derek Carr said that he wanted to see Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith in a UFC title, UFC octagon. And this got play on ESPN because, you know, because the new deal and all that stuff, this was pretty ridiculous. Daniel Cormier was revealed he made $4 million for his fight at Madison Square Garden. So if you're wondering how much it takes to get someone off the couch injured to fight in the UFC in a main event, there you go, $4 million. UFC 229, it was announced by the Las Vegas Tourism Board or whatever, that Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor back in October 2018 generated over $86 million for the city. John Jones, this is kind of a surreal day, a big day for the Nevada State Athletic Commission hearings and also for Fight Pass at the time, which is streaming them. John Jones, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Conor McGregor reached agreements with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Khabib was not happy with his teammates' punishment for that, and there was talk by the commission about punishments for fighters essentially talking trash, how they would legislate this. They didn't really say, they just kind of brought it up, which is obviously pretty ridiculous in the fight game. Jose Aldo said he was going to retire at the year's end and really didn't care about title shots. That would change rather quickly. Artem Lobov got released by the UFC per his request, and I insert that in there because he was going to be involved in bare-knuckle boxing later throughout the year. And at the UFC 235 presser, Ben Askren made his official UFC debut and as far as being part of the main roster. John Jones, Anthony Smith. There was some heat between Tyron Woodley and Kamaru Usman, and we learned that Holly Holm versus Aspen Ladd was not happening, and there was some heat between Ben Askren and Marty Usman. Marty from Nebraska, as Ben called him. We never got to see that fight, but there were some seeds planted for all that. Take it away.
Yeah, well, so after my comment earlier about how there wasn't a lot of place setting, you sure just talked about a lot of place setting. Mm. And a lot of the stuff that you talked about here, like these fights that were set up, really did play into like themes for the year. You know, like you brought up Till Masvidal and where Masvidal, you know, that was like his first big fight. And he kind of just used that as a platform to skyrocket. You know, we got Pettis and Wonder Boy, which, you know, Pettis ended up, spoiler alert, getting a big win, which set him up for a big fight. And, you know, Roy McDonald and John Fitch, that, you know, for Bellator turned into a big fight. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff here that, you know, would pay off later in the year. And a lot of times when we get all these announcements, you know, especially when you look back on them, you know, I'll make the joke like, oh, that'll be a great fight. I mean, knowing in retrospect that it never happened, and all these fights actually happened, so that's kind of cool that we, you know, we actually did get these things that we were promised. Yeah, so, and I know personally, I was really excited about the Ben Askren debuting. He was kind of like a shooting star, he kind of came in, got a big win, and we're just assumed he was gone. But, he did, he made a lot of noise this year. His name's going to come up a lot. And, it's too bad that he wasn't a little bit better, because I think with his mouth and with his talent, he could have really brought some eyeballs to the division. And that Askren-Usman fight, it's the one fight other than Colby Covington that you can probably get people to care about involving Usman. So, it's too bad that we would never get that fight. And just bringing up Holm and Ladd, right now, I'm kind of interested in seeing that fight, but I don't recall being terribly interested in it at the time. But Ladd's had a good year as well.
We'll flip to February, and February, it was a decent month, but not really a lot in terms of big news. And we'll kind of, so I don't really have any like big kind of stories as we're just talking about in January. So what we'll do is we'll kind of break this up into two chunks, and we'll talk about some of the results and things like that, because there are some interesting results here and stuff that would lead to some other things down the road, and especially for a former UFC heavyweight champion. But we'll get to that in a minute. UFC 234 in Australia. The guy that cannot seem to stay healthy when it comes to fights in his home country, Robert Whittaker, UFC middleweight champion at the time, out on fight day. And this was just one of those things. This is just such a, it felt like I was having a hernia when I heard this news, having have to have an emergency hernia surgery. And it was just, shout out to that guy for having a door, go through training camp, all that stuff with clearly something going on, having to have emergency hernia surgery. And so that put his fight out on that show. He was supposed to take on Kelvin Gastelum, obviously, and Gastelum in this very weird, he's trying to play a character of sorts, and it just didn't work. He was prating around with the version of the title at cage side, and basically saying that in his world, when you if you don't show up, you forfeit when it comes to, like, amateur wrestling and things like that. So he was the champion, and it was just I don't want to say classless, because this is fighting in LSA. It was just really, it's just really hokey, and just one of those things where it's like, all right, this just is not, it's not endearing to anyone. It's not heel heat. It's just X-Pac heat, so to speak.
Well, and it was, wasn't it Henry Cejudo's title belt too?
It was,
Which
you're
just
right.
adds to the corniness of it.
Oh, it was just so bad. Oh my God, it was so bad. So UFC was kind of in a tough spot. So Israel Adesanya, the budding star at middleweight, getting was a co-main event against Anderson Silva. That getting bumped up to the main event, still three rounds. Adesanya winning a decision. This was a very thin card. And Silva talking afterwards, he wanted Conor McGregor, Nick Diaz next, but there was nothing happening there. According to Dana White, this was the prelims again. This is kind of getting into the ESPN flow. 1.3 million watched the prelims on ESPN leading up to the show in Australia. Speaking of Holly Holm, she was announced she was going to look part of the Aspen Ladd issues. She was looking to renegotiate her contract and then work towards a Amanda Nunes title fight at UFC 237. Nunes was talking about then considering retirement, so part of the negotiations is probably there. UFC headed to Fortaleza, Brazil. Marlon Moraes setting himself up for a title shot later on in the year, submitting former top contender Rafael Assunção rather quickly. Jose Aldo, we just talked about him, a big TKO win over a former prospect and looked to be once a budding contender, and Renato Moc actually still actually yeah he didn't really do that well at the end of the year. Renato Moicano. This was meant to be, could be a star-making performance of Moicano, but not able to defeat Jose Aldo, who turned back time and looked fantastic in this one. Speaking of looking fantastic, Johnny Walker, big spinning back fist knockout on Justin Ledet, setting up some interesting things for him. And then Davey Amaya and Charles Oliveira picking up big submission wins on a show that was overall really good, if I remember it right. Stipe Miocic was, do you have something to say?
No, I agree. It was great. It was a good show. Sorry.
That's all right. Stipe Miocic said he was holding out for a title rematch against Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier saying that Miocic was entitled, which was unique to hear about the former UFC heavyweight champion. Colby Covington still chirping, saying that he's not the, basically was said that he was not the interim champ. He has to earn the title shot. He went another media tour. He's threatening to sue the UFC, continue to trash talk Dana White. So he was still doing anything to stay in the news. Yuenyan Jacek said she was going to move to strawweight after one move back to strawweight after one fight at flyweight. Dana White saying he wanted Conor McGregor back in the summer, and that Cerrone had earned the opportunity to fight him. There was talk about possibly an interim title. So as we hopefully get this fight coming up January, we see the underpinnings of this beginning, you know, way back, as is mentioned, in January and now in February. This is going to be a constant theme throughout the year. So it takes a long time to get Conor McGregor in there, ladies and gentlemen. Artem Lobov, which mentioned him, signing a deal with Bare Knuckle Boxing and went from, you know, a UFC prelim guy to all of a sudden a main eventer in Bare Knuckle, BKBC. I believe is the one he signed with. Bellator 221 booked, was going to see a super fight of sight of a source between two of their champions, Michael Chandler and Patricio Pitbull. Vanderlei Silva admitting to, you know, concussion issues and what sounded like potential for CTE, and that would not stop a Bare Knuckle group from signing him later on in the year, which is pretty sad. Bellator, two event weekend, and this was quite something. This was really terrible. Matt Mitrione, this is on Friday night. This is down in Connecticut. Matt Mitrione, in their fight against Sergey Karatanov, kicked him right in the nuts, and the fight ended in 15 seconds. So that was kind of like, all right. The next night, a blood feud. These guys have been chirping at each other, yelling at each other, talking shit for months and months and months and months. It felt like years. And then MVP and Paul Daly fought to 25 minutes, or 15 minutes rather, in this terrible, boring, no energy fight. It was amazing. Amazing how bad this was. And this was just like infuriating. I waited all this time for and this was part of the Welterweight Grand Prix. And it was a complete snoozer. Mirko Krokop fighting what would eventually be his last fight, defeating Roy Nelson by decision. And then there was a terrible Czech Congo fight, a victory earning him a title shot against Ryan Bader, a very uninspiring performance by him. Then UFC Phoenix, Francis Ngannou returning, knocking out the also returning Cain Velasquez in just 26 seconds. Cain Velasquez's knee buckled, and it was kind of a flash knockout, barely hit him, but he was down and out. Aljamain Sterling defeating Jimmy Rivera. Krohn Gracie made an impressive debut in the UFC. We had this awesome fight of the year candidate between Brian Barberena and Vicente Luque, and then Paul Felder defeating James Vick, who turned out he made it through this whole fight with a collapsed lung, which is unbelievable toughness. Kane was being kind of weird about the knockout afterwards, was kind of downplaying and all that stuff. We didn't know when he was going to see him again, obviously, and some things would change in his career. So let's kind of go over that first chunk. What stands out to you?
Well, I'll say, like, the UFC 234 card is actually the first pay-per-view card that I didn't purchase since, I believe it was UFC 177, was the TJ Dillashaw had a late replacement.
Joe Soto.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that one, I just kind of made a last minute decision. I'm not paying for this. And that was kind of the same thing on this one. So I went to a local casino and I saw the main event for free, but I wasn't going to pay, you know, $60 for this card. I watched the rest of the card and, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, 1.3 million watch on prelims. I'm pretty sure it was, you know, a pretty good prelim card. I'll watch free UFC like all day long, all night long. But, and I feel like when I actually did that, it kind of, it was like, I didn't really miss much. So it was like, I later on in the year, I tend to do that more and more often. And I don't think I'm alone. I think that especially with, moving to ESPN Plus and it being that much more difficult to actually order a pay-per-view now, that wasn't the case here. But I think that, there's a lot of people that probably are doing what I do and just picking and choosing more often now. So I do think that that's, a potential problem for UFC. Their money's guaranteed right now, but down the road, if their popularity wanes, they may not get that kind of money next time for the exclusive rights to their pay-per-view. The other thing was you talked about the Bellator, and I was actually going to bring this up in January, but the whole Bellator heavyweight situation, you brought up Mitrione and Karatanov's fight, and then the Congo fight. And I remember when Congo fought that fight, and I looking at his record, and I actually tweeted out at the time that he had, I think it was 9 straight wins, and he wasn't in the Grand Prix. And I brought that up, and Kongo actually retweeted it, and commented on it as well. And he said, "Thanks for noticing." And it was like, and he was making a big deal about that and this time, and asking for a title fight. And I just thought, it's true. Like, why wasn't he in this tournament? And they had Roy Nelson and just basically they were bringing up guys from middleweight like Rampage Jack, or sorry, light heavyweight like Rampage Jackson and Chael Sonnen, and Chuck Kongo, who's in an 8-fight win streak, can't get in the tournament. And then not only that, but you brought up the vacant title. The guy that originally had it that was stripped was Vitaly Minnikov.
Yeah.
He was actually back in Bellator by the time they crowned the champion. Like, it's just a complete mess. Like, and I mean, I enjoy laughing at it, but I mean, it's very hard to take them seriously, when stuff like this is going on.
Do you remember that MVP fight?
Oh my God, yeah.
It
I
was
mean,
so bad.
it was like MVP is hit or miss, and usually miss. And Daly is not like, I mean, he's generally got pretty exciting fights, but MVP, it's just his style. Like, if you don't want to engage with him, he won't engage with you, and they can just dance around. And this is not the first time he's done this. I do remember, I think it was his first high profile fight. It might have been on that pay-per-view that they had with King Mo and Rampage, where he was on the undercard. And I feel like he had a real snoozer of a fight in that one as well. But yeah, that it was bad. And then that Kongo fight was horrible. And of course, and then they cap it off with the 15-second nutshot, which they'd rematch again later in the year. I just, it's just Bellator being Bellator,
Yeah, and I did not. I thought this was it was a 5-round fight. I thought I was trying to remember the
Wow.
all the because it was a welterweight
The main
Grand Prix
event.
fight and a main
Yeah.
event. And Bellator, not all of their main events are 5-minute rounds. They some most a lot of times they'll do 3 rounds, but I think because of the because some
Yeah,
of
they
the
had to.
because the, some of them
Yeah,
have
'cause they.
title fights and things like that. Yeah, so yeah, it was 25 minutes. Oh my God,
Yeah,
yeah,
and it
not
was
good.
just bad. And then they, even with MVP, they a lot of times they'll put his really good fights on their app. Like,
Oh my, don't get me started with that. We then
well, we'll talk about it.
we will talk about that. That is one of the stupidest things.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go to the second part of the month. There was a lot of buzz about Donald Cerrone, Conor McGregor, Joe Rogan confirming, quote unquote confirming, that fight was signed. Dana White saying no, that was not the case. UFC 236 got Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier signed at what 155 pounds. What else we have here? We had Israel Adesanya against Kelvin Gastelum. Both were interim title fights as well, which was really kind of interesting. It was kind of like, well, why isn't Tony Ferguson getting a shot? Why is Max Holloway getting a shot at the interim lightweight title? It's because he turned it down, and we would soon learn a little bit afterwards why he would turn it down. But Dustin Poirier actually took that opportunity, so we're gonna have two interim title fights, which a lot of people were kind of groaning at. However, as we'll talk about later in the year, afterwards, not too many people were groaning about that decision. Bellator announced their plans for a 16-man featherweight Grand Prix. Georges St-Pierre officially retired with a press conference in Montreal. Khabib Nurmagomedov not accepting that at all and still said he wanted to fight him. There's a lot of stories about that afterwards and basically why that fight didn't happen. And people still holding out hope that we'll see that one day. UFC 237 in Brazil got Anderson Silva fighting against Jared Cannonier in a very strange fight and a weird continues a weird way. And now UFC tends to book some of their big veteran stars on the way out. Amanda Nunes said no to UFC 237. She said she'd fight in November or December, which was accurate. Bellator announcing they were going to re-sign both Pitbull brothers, keeping them in the promotion for a long time. UFC Russia, their return to Moscow, got Alistair Overeem versus Volkov in the main event. Mackenzie Dern announced she was pregnant. At UFC Prague, Thiago Santos knocking out Jan Blachowicz, or defeating by TKO, rather. In the third round, earned himself a title shot down the road. And then Stefan Struve submitting, I think it was Jose de Lima, or I can't remember his first name. And what would he thought it was going to be his last fight, left the gloves in the cage, all that as well. We learned that was not going to be the case later on in the year. Dylan Danis was suspended 7 months and $7,500 for his part in the October UFC 229 brawl. the aftermath of Khabib versus Conor. PFL saying, making their announcement, they were going to be on ESPN. So UFC was going to have some, I would say competition, but a brother-sister, brother-brother, whatever you kind of call it, relationship in that sense of the word with ESPN. So ESPN really getting doubling down when it came to ESPN Plus and MMA. Matt Hughes' wife and his brother got restraining orders against him, continuing with that sad story. It was announced that Sage Northcutt was going to make his debut for ONE Fighting Championships in May. Chael Sonnen versus Yoel Machida was announced for Bellator, happening during the summer. John Jones did the UFC 235 pretest, still having those Tarinabol flare-ups, which I know drove a lot of people crazy. And Colby Covington, again, showing up at the UFC 235 open workouts, trolling Kamaru Usman at the open workouts with a small megaphone, which was actually pretty funny. And he would make his presence felt a lot more throughout the weekend. So let's go with that second chunk.
Yeah, you know, there's a few things here. Nothing, like you said, super major newsworthy. Mackenzie Dern, funny that, you know, she's already back. So she announced her pregnancy in February. I guess she was probably a few months along already. And, you know, she obviously, as we know, had the baby and came back and fought and lost her fight. But, you know, she no longer seems to have trouble making weight and actually puts that towards the fact that she had a baby. So that's very interesting. Stefan Struve maybe should have stayed retired given what happened this past weekend to him. Poor guy. You know, I think he owes Dan Mergliotta a swift kick in the nuts, but we might talk about that later this year. Mm-hmm. The PFL deal. I know when I heard about this, I was like, I was kind of questioning it. Like, why would ESPN be interested in PFL? They were not doing very good ratings on NBC Sports Network, and they just seem to be like a money pit. They got these $6 million tournaments going on, and they, you know, it feels like a money laundering operation, but I don't know, you know, what's going on. But if you've actually ever watched their shows, and I did catch a few of them, I really, really like their presentation. They, and I don't know how much we're going to get a chance to talk about them, and that's why I kind of wanted to do it here. They, you know, the commentating, it really feels like a real sport the way they do it. They show like running time stats on the screen as the fights are going on. They have three commentators, and they all have very distinct roles. And they, you know, they go to like sideline reporters, and they do like the locker room interviews. And it's just, it really amps up the sports presentation of it. And I really feel like UFC could look at what they're doing and implement some of that in their broadcasts, and it would make their broadcast a lot better, especially the stats stuff. Like, I'm a stats guy, and I just love like the running stats, because I feel like a lot of times in, especially for a casual fan, like you're watching a show and you really have no idea who's winning a fight other than what the commentators are telling you. And here you can actually see the stats. So I really like that. And then the only other one was, you know, the announcement of Sage Northcutt. And it's amazing how far he's fallen in a few years. Like, I went to Vegas and saw a show that he was in the co-main event with, you know, him and Paige were 1 and 2. And that was like, that feels like a decade ago. And you know, and they both kind of like just completely off the map now. And they both seemed like super can't miss superstars. And, you know, just you got to win your fights. And unfortunately, Sage hasn't really done that.
Speaking of winning fights, let's move to March. And March had a lot of interesting things that happened in it. We'll start right from the top. UFC 235, the light heavyweight champion of the world, John Jones, returning, dominating Anthony Smith for the better part of five rounds. And that was to retain his title. Smith, the win. I mean, it was a decision. It was kind of like, it was an okay fight. Really, the big thing was Jones hitting an illegal shot late, and if Smith had not been able to continue, potentially that Smith would have been awarded the light heavyweight title. I know some questions that, you know, that would never happen. I mean, the sport does have rules, what have you, but, you know, Smith didn't seem to be that hurt. Got up, took the rest of his beating, and moved on. But that was a big talking point. I remember afterward was how Smith was a quote unquote professional in doing that, but he didn't really look that, you know, that hurt by that shot. Kamaru Usman dominating Tyron Woodley to take the UFC welterweight title. And Ben Askren making his UFC debut against Robbie Lawler. This was controversial. The bulldog choke that basically Herb Dean said that Lawler tapped or was out rather, and I mean he was like popped right back up. So there was a lot of talk about that. So of course Ben Askren making his after getting a beating by Robbie Lawler, basically getting flipped upside down. This was a lot of fun. I tell you what, Ben Askren's run, it only lasted 1 year, and we'll talk a lot about more his fights throughout the rest of the year. They were all memorable, that's for sure. And this is a great start to his career. Diego Sanchez turning back time, dominating Mickey Gall on the undercard. Johnny Walker, we talked about, had a quick turnaround, knocking out Mirko Cirkunov, injured his shoulder in the celebration afterwards, which kind of derailed some things for him. Talked about Cody Garbrandt and his return. It was not a good one. Pedro Munhoz knocking him out. And this is overall, this is a fun show. The pay-per-view was great. The prelims were really a lot of fun. Interesting stuff up and down the card. UFC 235, one of my top shows of the year.
Yeah, it really was. I did watch this show. The Askren-Lawler thing, I mean, it was one of those deals where like he probably wasn't out, but he probably would have been out if Herb Dean had let it go on longer, is kind of how that felt. So I think that, you know, he probably did make the right call. You make a split decision. You make a split second call. You really don't know what's happening. You just got to do what you feel is right. Diego Sanchez, when we see fights like this all the time, where you got a guy coming up that, you know, has kind of a big name and has dominated fighters leading into the fight, and then he goes against a veteran who may be on a losing streak. And I'm always taken back to that famous quote by Daniel Cormier, you know, there are levels to this. And I remember looking at that fight at the time and looking, okay, how does Gall win? Well, he usually gets guys on the ground and submits them. Diego Sanchez doesn't submit. So it's like, okay, well, this is gonna be really interesting to see how this plays out. And sure enough, like he just, you know, he kind of dominated him, and it was a big win for him. And he seemed like he was done, and he's had a few fights since then. He's got one coming up that I'm looking forward to. And yeah, so it's like, you know, just when you think you write somebody off, they're not quite done. And then I you had to love like Johnny Walker doing the cartwheel and hurting himself. Luckily, it wasn't too bad, and he only missed a few months. But that was a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I remember he did the kind of like this. That was like the Statue of Liberty pose, and just basically did the flop on his chest, and then got up in his shoulder.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah,
yeah, he did his shoulder that was hurt and all that, and it was like, okay. Remember, Dana did not look too happy after that.
And you knew it right away. Right away when you saw it. It's like, oh, what a guy. but you can't help but love the guy.
And then UFC London, Jorge Masvidal beginning what would be a very, very a good year for him, to say the least, knocking out Darren Till cold. This was interesting. This was obviously, you know, UFC continuing to try to make Darren Till a star. They would later admit that, you know, perhaps they pushed him a little bit too hard, too quick. But, you know, this was a guy in Masvidal who really had been a, I don't want to say a decision fighter, but for the most part, I mean, he did feel like every time he would fight, it was always a split decision. He would lose and be frustrated because he just wouldn't do enough to win. And this one, I mean, he knocked him out cold and really set himself up for some interesting things. Backstage, there was a scrap with Leon Edwards. He had picked up a split decision win over Gunnar Nelson, and there was a Masvidal doing an interview. Edwards yelled something at him. He walked over and hit him with what was known as a three-piece and a soda, which was a line that got repeated a lot, continues to get repeated a lot to this day, and really just helped escalate Masvidal even more. We still have not seen Masvidal Edwards at this point, and everyone thought that was going to be the case, but Masvidal seemed to move into a different lane after this. Dominic Reyes setting himself off some big things with a big win over Volkan Ozdemir, former title challenger. And like I mentioned a second ago, we had the Leon Edwards split decision win over Gunnar. And what the other thing, the Darren Till loss hurt, was a fight against Ben Askren. Askren actually flew out to UFC London. I think it was part of the did a Q&A before the weigh-ins, as fighters often do. And there was a lot of, you know, shit talking with those guys on social. And Lobo, you know, we thought, well, oh my God, you know, this Darren Till will get Bass Masvidal. We're going to see this, you know, these guys, you know, do not like each other at all. We're looking really excited like that. And I was getting really excited. And then all of a sudden, you know, just like that, Jorge Masvidal changing the conversation. And I wonder, had the backstage thing not happened, you know, how much that added the fuel to the fire. But this is a good night to be Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is very interesting. Like, because you think about going into that, like, it seemed like there was a lot of stuff that was being set up. You know, the Askren Till would have been a really nice fight to headline another show in the UK, or be maybe undercard on a pay-per-view show. And then, you know, and then you've got, you know, Masvidal would do something. And he had that backstage deal with Leon Edwards. So that seemed like a ready-made fight. But the fact that Masvidal won so impressively, and then, you know, like, and then you've been setting up Askren to fight Till. So now, well, we might as well put Askren against Masvidal. And then, you know, Askren will beat Masvidal, and then maybe he'll go on to challenge Covington or something, or Usman. And then this happened, right? Then you had later on in the year, you had Masvidal get another big KO win. So it was really cool the way everything set up for him. Leon Edwards really opened a lot of eyes. It was a split decision, but if you recall, like, that was the judge that had that for Gunnar Nelson was watching a different fight.
Yes.
Like, it was, yeah. Like, I think, yeah, the last round was arguably Gunnar's, but the other two were clearly Leon Edwards rounds. And it was very, very questionable. But it was like, they're in the UK, and Leon Edwards, you know, well, he's from the UK as well, but Gunnar was a big crowd favorite because of his friendship with Conor McGregor and all that. But yeah, it was a really, turned out to be a noteworthy show. And Darren Till, like, you know, getting knocked out like that, I mean, it ended up chasing him to the middleweight division in the long run, which is probably a better spot for him. And yeah, so it was really like a lot of stuff came out of this. And Dominic Reyes, you know, he was the next title challenger, right? So, you know, he it was like a ton of stuff happened in this card.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for March, it was really one of the big ones.
Yeah, it was a nice place setter for some big things to come. And yeah, and so we go to kind of the third thing, which is more business. And this was a big surprise, especially for those obviously that, you know, are on our website, interested in the business of pay-per-view, have been, you know, so trained to it for so many years with WWE and WCW and UFC pay-per-views, and, you know, other people trying to jump in. And, you know, WWE moving to the network, that obviously changed some things. And then all of a sudden, ESPN announced that they were, and this is one I think most people had to read and look at the scroller, look at the release, you know, 3-4 times to really kind of understand what was being said, because it didn't really make sense what they were doing. But ESPN announcing that ESPN Plus was going to be the home of all UFC pay-per-views in North America from here on out. And it was kind of like, I remember I had to confirm with someone from ESPN, I believe, or maybe someone from UFC. I'm like, so this means, because we were talking about it in our Slack chat, because we're doing a story on it. I don't understand. Like, they're not doing pay-per-view like with Comcast or, you know, Cox or any, like, Rogers, any, like, you just can't order a UFC pay-per-view anymore like that. And they're, and it's like, no, this is the only place you have to have ESPN Plus in order to order pay-per-view. And I was like, holy shit, just like that. And they extended their TV deal by a couple of years. And this is, I mean, less than 2 months after this deal started. So obviously, you know, there's some talks about all this before. Dana White re-upping for 7 more years with the company. So that, you know, he wasn't going anywhere. And he, along the way, reinforced there was going to be no 165-pound division. This was basically just dumping cold water over everyone's parade that was hoping, you know, fighters want this 165, a lot of fans do, and it's basically saying, nope, not doing it, and digging in so deep that, you know, he's up to his neck in the sand. But yeah, this was, you know, from a business standpoint, this was obviously big, and this changes everything. And we'd soon learn after, you know, why is UFC doing this? Well, they're going to get a guaranteed monthly take basically based on the average of, you know, could have been the last 3 years. I don't know if we ever got that confirmed, but you know, that's a, for a company that struggled with pay-per-views. You were just talking about this, you know, the Adesanya fight, the Adesanya Silva pay-per-view, and you skipped that and so on from February. You know, a lot that basically helps insure them from a lot of that. And why ESPN would do this, who knows? But they're basically being like, all right, we got the money, we want all this, and they're fully in the pay-per-view business with UFC.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was huge. I mean, really, arguably, the biggest business story of the year, to basically take UFC off of pay-per-view. I think, like, I know in Canada you can still order it traditionally. I don't know about other countries. You can also order it through UFC, which is how I do it, through my Fight Pass, because I cut the cord in April. But in the United States, yeah, which is their biggest market, now there's no traditional pay-per-view, and they, from what I recall correctly, they basically took an, like you said, an average of the last couple of years, and I think Dave reported that it was the equivalent of, basically they're getting the equivalent of a $300,000 by show for every show, and all indications are that one, maybe two shows this year, ESPN's made that money back. And every other show has been below that or less. But of course, we don't get numbers. And you brought up how we're so used to being able to get the numbers on everything. And it's like everything after March now, we have no idea. Like, yeah. It's, you know, if there's educated guesses out there, but UFC knows. The UFC knows the exact number, and they're not telling anybody. I feel like if it was good numbers, they would be telling us, or I say UFC, I imagine UFC does, ESPN obviously does, because it's on their service, but you know, it's frustrating, and even me, like, who keeps track of all this stuff, and I have my site that was, well, kind of revolved around, okay, who's the best draws, and we use, like, the pay-per-view buys to figure that out. We don't know. Like, we know the TV ratings, and you can kind of make educated guesses based on that, but really, like, we just don't know, and they know, and they up, you know, they signed for 7 years, and all indications are they're happy. So ESPN must have a strategy of what they're doing, and they've been a successful television network for a very long time, and they do most things right. So, you know, whether you assume there's a method to their madness, and it is 7 years. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, we'll see what happens at the end of 7 years. Boy, another pro wrestling.
Am I talking to Paul Levesque or Paul Fontaine tonight? This is the second Triple H business line you've dropped tonight. The game, indeed. The cerebral.
I got a few more. Yeah. It's all about the game.
All about the game. You got that right. And, you know, a lot of this is for ESPN, it's about data. You know, they now have all this data. They know who's buying. They could get all this different analysis on it. How much time people are spending watching stuff. So really, you know, my hope with this and really with, you know, with the money they're paying and so on, is that they're finding a receptive partner in the UFC who is listening to them, and some of the data that they're bringing back and suggestions that they're making, because I'm sure they are. And one of the things I think with these ESPN deals so far, not necessarily with the pay-per-views, because those have always flowed pretty well, but I think with the TV product for ESPN Plus, is that there's not a lot of wasted time between fights now. Everything moves pretty quickly, because, you know, they have some commercials, but there's not, it's easier, I think, to make it through a show than it has been before. There's not as much of a delay as there was in the Fox era, where it just felt like shows are being dragged on and on and on and on. So for fans, I think overall, I know we're just talking right through March, it's been a positive. They're getting more representation on ESPN, which is good. And I know that most people, they kind of live in their own news bubble. If they don't follow ESPN, they may think that, you know, who cares about that? You know, no one watches ESPN. Well, a lot of people watch ESPN. It's on in bars all over the country and all over the place. People that are casual sports fans will check in, and if it kind of helps get that bug in their head, at least, you know, talk value, things like that, that's important as well. So, I mean, as much as this was a surprise to the pay-per-view, and obviously it makes things a lot more difficult because they're trying to get ahead of the curve instead of behind it, it gives them time to kind of figure things out, put their flag in the sand, and kind of help people understand how to buy stuff a lot more. And, you know, obviously I think we'll see with this McGregor fight coming up in January, I think that's going to be a big test for them. I'm sure they're happy. But them paying the money, that also puts a lot of emphasis on them that, and I'm surprised they didn't push this more. Maybe they have behind the scenes of like, why isn't McGregor fighting? When can we get him back, you know, in the mix? Because for ESPN, that's money that they can make back. And I'm sure they're going to make a ton back with McGregor coming up. So my hope is that they're finding a good partner that's listening to the UFC and not just an entity that's just taking their money and not really listening, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there's one other part of this that I didn't really mention, and I was thinking about, was if you get a really big fight like Conor McGregor fight that we've got coming up, and let's say 1 million people buy the show, well, that's 1 million people, maybe 700,000 of them didn't have ESPN Plus already, so they have to sign up for the service. Yeah. And then if they buy the service, and if they like the service, and maybe they'll check out another show because they got it for a month and they like the show, and they say, well, for $10, yeah, I'll just keep it. And that's where they get their money back, right? So if you know, a big show increases, like we had that one show in January that, you know, they got 525,000 signups. Well, if even half of those people kept the service for the whole year, that's an extra, you know, 260,000 subscribers, $2.6 million that they're getting every month, in addition to whoever is just ordering for the pay-per-views, plus whatever else, you know. And from what I've seen of the service, like, we can't get it here, but I have seen it when I've been in the States, and, you know, even checked it out with a VPN and stuff. And like a lot of the, you know, they've got all the 30 for 30s on there. They've got boxing shows. They've got soccer, if you're into that. A lot of stuff on that platform. It's not just MMA. And, you know, like, I don't know what their subscription level is at right now, but I suspect it's over 1 million. And a good portion of that has got to be for UFC.
Yeah, $5 a month, too. It's a steal. And just the only thing that sucks it's the interface. The interface and trying to find things is not great. The player experience is not great. I mean, it's DVR-like, but it's if you start a show, if you jump into a main show and you're trying to rewind back to the beginning of the show, it's a little bit of a nightmare. But my hope is that they, you know, figure things out. But for $5 a month, it's a steal.
We have in Canada, we have TSN Direct, which is probably, I guess, the similar version, except it airs all the TSN stuff. But we have zero DVR function. So it's like you watch it live or you don't watch it. And that really
what? Wow.
So it's like, like that, like even to record this, like I was watching a Winnipeg Jets game and I couldn't pause it. Like I just, you know, I'll catch up with it later, I guess. Unreal. But it's, you know, and Sportsnet, which is our other major network up here, you can rewind up to 24 hours to watch anything. They don't have any on demand, but they do have the ability to rewind live sports 24 hours. So that's how I watch wrestling and UFC, and then I can fast, or UFC's not on there, but other sports like hockey, baseball, you know, whatever that Sportsnet airs. So yeah, but you figure if Sportsnet can do it, why can't TSN and why can't ESPN Plus? But they got 7 years to figure that out. So.
Let's go through the rest of the month. A lot happened, so let's split this up and do a couple chunks here. Vitor Belfort not staying on the retirement line too long. Signing with One Fighting Championships. He has yet to fight, but he announced he was going to be back. No big surprise there. No testing in Japan. Let's see. Colby Covington, we keep talking about him a lot. Part of his UFC 235 weekend, finding Dana White at a card table, recording it. Hilarity ensued. This was very funny to watch if you haven't seen this video already. The aforementioned Mirko Krokop suffering a stroke and retiring instead of fighting anymore in Japan or anywhere else. Paige VanZant suffered another broken arm injury, but still managed to make it in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, so good for her. Covington, it was announced after the Usman fight, he was going to get the first shot at Usman. There was a dust-up in the hotel between them. There was almost a problem at cage side that night. The hotel one, it was at I believe it was in line at a buffet in the actual casino itself, and there was I think Usman's mother might have been around. It was just a really weird scene that someone caught on camera. So Colby Covington's big weekend coming to the end, and he was announced as getting the first shot at Usman. We just didn't think it was going to take 9 months to get there. Dana White announced that he wants Askren and Lawler too after the controversial fight. Askren said no, he's all set with that. UFC announced they were going to come to Stockholm, Greenville, South Carolina, and Rochester, New York. Let's see, UFC Fort Lauderdale getting Yoel Romero versus Jacare Souza, as Paulo Costa was out of that fight with an injury, and Greg Hardy was also announced for that card as well. UFC 237, as I mentioned earlier, officially got the Andrade Rose main event. We also got Jose Aldo against top rising featherweight contender Volkanovski. It was fighting actually this weekend. And for some reason, BJ Penn versus Clay Guida. McGregor and Cerrone, the ongoing saga continues. Conor said he's not going to fight if there's no main event. It's like, what is going on here? This is all this talk. Later on, we learned that Dana White wanted a UFC heavyweight title fight with Daniel Cormier to headline over the Conor fight, and Conor said he was not going to have any interest in being a co-main event, or if he did, he wanted essentially main event money, and there was just a big problem with all that. New York Times reporting that, unfortunately, out of the cage, Conor did not have a good year, reporting that Conor McGregor is under investigation for a sexual assault in Ireland. And McGregor announcing that he was retired. So that was the month in Conor McGregor. UFC Wichita, Junior Dos Santos knocking out Derek Lewis, continuing a nice resurgence at heavyweight. Nico Price, knockout of the year artist for sure, knocking out Tim Means. And this was, overall, this was a pretty decent show. And we got announced that UFC Stockholm was getting a Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Smith main event. There's a lot of question whether Smith even wanted to do this after a interview that he had on the MMA show with Ariel Helwani. Ir Latifi versus Volkan Ozdemir, and also Jimmy Manuwa versus Rakic, who I'm completely forgetting his first name. We'll talk about him a lot more as the year goes on. And then we'll end it here. Conor McGregor, as I mentioned before, was charged with stealing a fan's cell phone and smashing it outside a Miami nightclub a week after he just had completed his community service for the bus incident in October. So yeah, this was quite a month for Conor McGregor, all things considered.
Yeah, the month of Conor. I mean, and a lot of talk for a guy that wasn't going to fight for a while. Yeah, other than the Conor stuff that, you know, we talked about, Vitor, I totally forgot about him signing with ONE, and apparently they have as well, because there's been no fights announced, nothing interesting. I kind of, when you mentioned Paige VanZant and the swimsuit issue, I had to do a little bit of Google search for a minute there and kind of stop listening for a while. and I imagine maybe some of our listeners did that as well. And if you did, well, hopefully you enjoyed it like I did. The Greg Hardy getting another fight after kind of embarrassing himself early on was kind of telling. And some of these fights that got lined up, Andrade Rose, turned into pretty noteworthy. So not much other than all the Conor stuff. And again, it's pretty crazy that, all this talk about Conor, and I just, it felt like he's never going to fight again, but he is. And it always felt like the fight was going to be Cerrone, and everyone said no, and things played out. Cerrone would win, he'd lose. It would be like, well, the Conor fight's back on. No, it's off. No, it's never going to happen. Yes, it's going to happen. He's going to jail. He's not going to jail. And here we are at the end of the year, and it's happening. So hopefully it happens. and that UFC Wichita show, like for just a regular kind of run-of-the-mill fight night, that was actually a pretty memorable show. And that knockout by Nico, that was the one, I believe. Was that the upkick?
Yes.
That was definitely KO of the year candidate.
Yeah, and then Means fall, like he basically fell. It's one of those nasty knockouts where he falls on his leg and all the body weight goes on and you just see his leg basically break in front of you.
It's like,
oh my God.
And then JDS and Lewis too, like it's another one of those level fights, right? Like where JDS is like the veteran that you think is done, and he's had some losses, and Derek Lewis is the guy that, you know, has been kind of blitzing everybody. But when he gets up there against really good guys like DC and JDS, it kind of shows him, okay, this is where you're at, buddy.
So we'll go to the second chunk of the month, Endeavor, the UFC's owners, returning $400 million to Saudi Arabia. I include that because the exact opposite of what WWE did. That was obviously a big talking point with WWE throughout the year. Tony Ferguson's wife submitting a restraining order against him. I put there as a catch. So if you remember, you know, Ferguson was had turned down the opportunity to fight for the interim lightweight title, and it was believed that this was part of it. Submitting a restraining order, you hear that, it's obviously not good, but it is a, I think it was a law in the state that essentially she wanted him to get some help for some mental issues, and the only way to force his hand to do that was a restraining order. So she was, she admitted, she's like, I wasn't very afraid for my life or kid's life or anything like that. Just, this is legally the only way to make this happen. So that's why I wanted to include that in there. Chris Leben, big surprise, didn't get paid by one of these bare knuckle fight organizations that are seemingly popping up all over the place. Michael Bisping was announced he was going to get, or it was announced rather, that Michael Bisping was going to get inducted in the UFC Hall of Fame in a nice moment. A surprise for him, actually, which we didn't know about until afterward. But it was they did a video and he was actually a cage guy. This might have been the UFC London show, but he learned about there, which is pretty cool. We're still going to keep talking about Conor. It was said he was going to negotiate for a summer return, but that he would fight in that co-main for what he called rightful shares in the UFC. So we know how that went. However, it's not going to be against Donald Cerrone because UFC Ottawa got Donald Cerrone versus Al Iaquinta as a main event. TJ Dillashaw, this is obviously a big story. I kind of buried this a bit. We talked about this earlier, giving up the UFC bantamweight title due to a failed test by both USADA and the New York State Athletic Commission. And I believe it was for EPO was the offending drug. But obviously, this was big news because the bantamweight title was up for grabs. All the shit talking with Cejudo, and Dillashaw was essentially going to be out of the sport for a long time. Just like that, which was a real big shock. I mean, this happened like on a Monday morning. Ariel Helwani reported it. This was really surprising stuff. We'll talk about that more in a minute. UFC 239 getting Luke Rockhold and his light heavyweight debut against Jan Blachowicz. Derek Lewis, we talked about him, announced he was going to get ACL surgery after trying to fight through this injury since 2015. UFC Rochester getting RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos, a former lightweight champion of the world, against Kevin Lee, who is going to be making his debut at welterweight. Again, we talked about Frank Mir making his wrestling debut at Bloodsport, which delete that. Holly Holm announced she was going to fight signed a new six-fight UFC deal. DAZN in the ever-changing streaming wars announced it was changing its pricing model, actually going towards you could pay more, essentially two different things. It was instead of $9.99 for everyone, you could pay a $99 for the year and get upfront and get pay a little bit less than that. Or if people just want to do a 1 month for $20, essentially $20 pay-per-view, if they wanted to see a Canelo fight or something like that, they could do that as well. So that was kind of interesting. This strange story, Frank Shamrock leaving a dog in his truck at the airport. This is a strange story. I could try to explain this. Just Google it. It is it's very bizarre. Very weird stuff. UFC Nashville, we talked about that earlier, alluded to it. Anthony Pettis returning and knocking out Stephen Thompson's Superman punch. Connected perfectly, knocked him out cold is quite something. And then Curtis Blaydes dominating Justin Willis in what will be Justin Willis's last fight in the UFC. Ronda Rousey, the former UFC superstar, was going to be headlining WrestleMania. First time women were going to be main eventing that show. Going to be against Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. Uriah Faber started talking about a UFC comeback that would eventually happen. UFC 238 got Henry Cejudo. We just talked about him, the flyweight champion, against Marlon Moraes in a fight for the bantamweight title. Cain Velasquez, it was announced that he was going to wrestle at Triple Mania, or there was a lot of rumors about this. Obviously, you know, coming off that big loss against Francis Ngannou in February, and all of a sudden he said he was going to go into pro wrestling. And so that was going to be a big story throughout the year. And then finally, UFC Philadelphia, Justin Gaethje knocking out Edson Barbosa in the first round. Jack Hermanson submitting David Branch in just 49 seconds, setting himself up for a big opportunity later on. Michelle Waterson trying to get her run towards the title shot with a decision win over Karolina Kovalkiewicz. And there's also some post-fight weirdness I put here with with Felder and Gaethje. So Paul Felder was doing color commentary for the show, and it was on the desk. They do the interviews afterwards. So the winner, it was such a trying to petition for a fight with Justin Gaethje, and did it in a really polite way, but Gaethje didn't seem to like it, and weird fans and media kind of turned on Felder a little bit afterwards. A very, very weird situation, but I remember that was something that happened after all this as well. So that's the rest of March. What do you got?
Well, we already talked about the TJ Dillashaw having to give up his title. That was, pretty big for the division, and it ended up making Henry Cejudo a 2-division champion. The Holly Holm signing a 6-fight UFC deal is interesting, given her advanced age and the fact that she hasn't looked like a world beater recently, but she has a big name. So I'm very interested in, I mentioned her earlier, potentially Adam Aspen Ladd, so I'm kind of interested in her still. So I guess it's good that they re-signed her. The DAZN deal, that we had that same thing in Canada as well. So I actually paid for the whole year. I think it's here, it's 150, but we also get the NFL. Which is, that was for me, I got it for Bellator, and I don't even watch Bellator anymore, but I watch the NFL like crazy. And I shouldn't say I don't watch Bellator. I don't watch every single show like I used to, but I still watch the big stuff and most of the main cards and stuff like that. So, that Philly show was, I remember that being a lot of fun. I mean, and it's nice when those fans get a good show. It generally is a pretty fun show to watch. Because the fans are kind of crazy. They've got that reputation from pro wrestling and football, hockey, pretty much everything. I was really happy to see Watterson get that big win there, and it propelled her into a real big fight later in the year as well. And Karolina Kovalkiewicz was, she's also one of my guilty pleasures to watch, and it was sad that one of them had to lose, but I felt really nice, really good for Michelle Watterson. It's too bad that her prime didn't come, maybe 5 years or later, that she's not 5 years younger, because I feel like she could have been a really big star, and unfortunately, and she's a little small for the weight class as well, so, and they're never going to bring in an atom weight division, so she's kind of stuck where she is.
Well, you and I are going to be talking a lot more here over the next few weeks. So we'll call it good here, just over nearing about an hour 20, hour 15 or so. Before I let you go, want to give you the chance to go ahead and plug where people can follow you on the social media, where people can read your work. The floor is yours.
Well, you mentioned Wrestling Observer. I've been doing a little bit more there lately with the extra promotion now with AEW, like doing the ratings for them, and not as much in the way of columns. Although I got a few ideas, so you never know. Just keep checking that old front page, and you might see something from me, especially being the year end. Be interesting to look at where the different company TV ratings are at. So I might do something like that. I want to take a chance to plug something from another member of the site, and I'm kind of involved with, is Garrett Gonzalez, who sometimes hosts Wrestling Observer Radio. He has a really fun podcast called the Fight Game Podcast. You can just search iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, he's on there. I'm occasionally a guest on there, but the one thing we've also got is a Facebook group. And it's by invite only, but if you hit me up or Garrett up on Facebook, you'll get invited into the group. And we have a lot of really cool discussions on MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing, and really in-depth business-related discussion, the kind of things that, sometimes you'll get on the board, but the people here are way more involved, and it's a really, really fun group. And Garrett's really approachable, and you really get to know a lot of the people and a lot of the guys you maybe have read, but you don't really talk to. Well, this is your chance to do that. So it's just search up Fight Game Podcast on Facebook and check us out.
What the heck? I haven't been invited to this Facebook group. What am
I? Well, you will. I'll invite you as soon as we get off.
Man.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I just never thought of it, probably. So yeah, actually, I have thought of it, and I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, you guys are like, nah.
No.
He's well, management.
Well, that's part of it. I'll be honest. But no, you could definitely be on it. We just brought in a couple mods, Jeff Hawkins, and can't remember who the other one. But Ryan Frederick's on there. John LaRocca. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and yeah, so check it out.
Well, LaRocca owes me big time because I've edited a lot of his columns that he used to write for us as being the Booker thing back in the day. So that guy owes me big time, and Garrett too, because I made Garrett every single thing he is today, and he'll never admit that, but he knows it deep down inside.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun, and his podcast is really good too. The one him and John do.
Good stuff. All right, Paul. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much, and yeah, we'll call it good. Thanks so much for making your year in review debut, a return to Josh Nason's Punch Out.
All right, take care, guy.
All right, big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by for part one. You will hear him again next week for part two. And yeah, next week we'll go into, let's see, let me get my months. January, February, March we did. April, May, and June. I should know the months by now considering my three-year-old is learning these and can do them pretty well. I had to correct her from saying Jaloon at one point, but she's doing a lot better now with that. So anyway, so yeah, April, May, and June coming up next week. And then I think we might take a break for Thanksgiving week. Thanksgiving, Jesus. December for Christmas. God, I can't even talk right. We'll see what's going on Christmas week. We'll come back. And then obviously the final 3 months of the year, we'll do just after the first of the year and wrap that series up. And yeah, a lot of stuff happening right now. Obviously, if you're listening to this leading into UFC, whatever it is this weekend, with Max Holloway and Alex Volkanovski, and we have obviously got Covington and Usman and all that. There's a ton of previews everywhere, so I didn't really want to do a big preview pod this week. I want to get right in the year review. And of course, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, during the Q4 review. So I'm going to let you guys go. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I appreciate the time you spend with me, my guests, or anyone else on our great podcast network. Thank you for your continued support with us and the show in particular. So I'm Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.